it wise to give gold to the poor? We're talking about wise men. We're talking about gifts. And I don't know about you, but I don't know when to give money. You think that I'd be a professional knowing when to give money, but I am not. I have trouble. Now, Salvation Army, I'm okay with. I rang the bell. I, you know, pick the kettle, put the dollar in. But even then, they got some things. Oh, they're making too much money. I don't know what to do. And then, don't even talk to me about, you know, maybe the woman, you know, with the cardboard sign at Topsy Lane, and you just came out of shopping, buying stuff you don't need, and there she is with the sign. And you think, what? And what about the guy who comes up to you in the restaurant parking lot? This is happening to you, right? The guy comes to the restaurant parking lot, wants some money for gas for his, get his family back home, and he's just got a dollar, and he needs gas, and he's just finished another kind of stuffing yourself you don't need. And you think, I don't know. And then you read the scriptures, you know, give to the one who asks you. And you think, I don't know what to do. How can you be a wise giver? What is wisdom? Have you ever thought about what is wisdom? And I thought about it, and I didn't look at the definition. I thought, you know what wisdom is? It's looking at the big picture, I think. Looking at all the ramification, looks beyond, and it does more than, it's more reflective than reactionary. It doesn't do things on impulse. It sort of knows how things go in the long run, long haul, the big picture, all the way down, you know. Well, you got some wise guys here, Kings 3. What, the Bible doesn't say there's three. Doesn't say they're kings. It doesn't even say they're men. And all we got left is the wise part, and I'm not even sure about the wise part. You know, here's some guys that's got to see something going on in the star, a sky, star, good star, rising, and then off they go, and they get lost. You got a star in the sky, and you get lost. Oh, come on now. And then, who do you go ask about the new king of the Jews? Who would you ask? Well, you go, of course you go, to the current king of the Jews, who has no idea he's been replaced. And this is the guy who kills relatives because he's jealous. Imagine how happy he's going to hear that his replacement is born, and these jokers are here to give him gifts. Oh, yeah. All this stuff, no, it's not for you. This is for the real king. I mean, the king of Jews. Not you. Somebody else. Are these wise people? I don't think so. And they say, hey, tell me where you find it so I come to worship. Oh, sure, King Herod. We'll do that right away. I don't know if they're kings. I don't know if they're men. I don't know if they're three of them. And they're a little sneaky on the wise part. I mean, bringing gold, frankincense, and myrrh, nice human salve, some perfume, and gold to a baby? Well, that is not anything. Well, maybe the perfume. There's nothing about that. I mean, if it was a wise group, what would they bring? Come on now, you know. Pampers, formula, coffee. There you go. There's some wise gifts. That'd be a welcome to the home. Come on in, guys. I don't know if they're wise, but these are the guys we look out when we think about gifts giving. They're the first ones that, you know, and you think, you know, why couldn't they bring shouts? You know, shouts was good. Shepherds, what'd they do? Shout! They were telling everybody, hey, hey, King of the Lord. Angels, song. Song's good. Song. You like the song? Song's great. Yes. Yeah. And I even hear there was like a drum solo at one point. I really don't know where that is. I never preached on that one. But, you know, there's all sorts of stuff you can get. Go, frankincense. Is it a good thing to give money to the poor? You know, we're talking about that now, don't we? About that. Is it good to get money? And I hear, I read in the bulletin, I didn't hear it, I think we should have said it at some point. The annual meeting's next week, and then officially next week. I think you might be talking about wise given next week too. You know, it's not exactly Christ, but you know, it's kind of Christian church. It's kind of his institution, the body of Christ, and what carries on after him. So we're going to be talking about whether it's wise what we're doing with our money we're giving to Christ. And we're no better off than when we started. About how to be wise. I love TED Talks. Who loves TED Talks? Anybody loves that? TED Talks? Oh, I love that stuff. Oh, yeah. There's a new thing. It's TED Radio Hour. Oh, I love this. Because they cut up the TED Talks, which are already 11 minutes. Who's got that kind of time? You know, oh, I got things to do. But, you know, they cut them up and they put them in a radio and you have several in an hour. And I like that, the radio, because it's really hard to watch those videos while you're driving. You know? So I'm listening to that TED Talk December 20th, and there's this guy that talks about giving. And I said, hallelujah, I need a sermon next January. I'm just going to steal this TED Talk, so I'm just straight out telling you, I'm taking it. It's all from Don Colodo, okay? I'm taking it December 20th. You can look it up, read it. But I'm going to take, he accidentally said some holy stuff, so I'm stealing that part. You want to read all, you don't want to know the big economic arguments, all of that. This one. We don't go with that. No, but the sacred stuff he accidentally said, he talked about wise giving. And he told his story. Which is a phenomenal story. This is a guy who could raise some money, who could do some wise giving. I mean, back before giving to AIDS was fashionable, back before breast cancer was a good thing to have and to spend money on, before all that, he came in and he did an amazing amount. He did, you know, forget about this, you know, this walk for an hour stuff. He did 3-day hikes for breast cancer. You know, he did AIDS bike rides, you know, for days and huge things. He did amazing. He started out, they gave him $50,000 to start an event, and he brought back net. After paying everything, he brought back over $1 million. And people started taking notice of him. He started growing. He started having chapters all over. He did these big events and he didn't take a percentage of it. No, he wasn't that way. He charged a fee. He had a for-profit company to do good. He thought it was okay to make money doing good. What a foolish man. You're only allowed to make money doing bad. It's true. It's true. You make some violent video games, you'll be on the cover of Wired. You make people addicted to terrible, awful, not good for them food, and you're a savage. You're great. We love you. But you make money fighting AIDS and cancer, you are a scumbag. How dare you do that? He went on and no one caught him for a while. They let him make money for good causes. And then, suddenly, they figured out that this guy was spending money doing good. They wanted to do a ride in a bike ride in New York City. How do you get attention in New York City? They bought a full-color ad in the Sunday New York Times in the living section. $50,000 for an advertisement for a charity run. Oh, horrible! It's terrible! It brought in $2 million. His last year was his best year. He was on track of making $51 million for an event for breast cancer, and he got fired. How would you like to make $51 million? Returning 60% of your expenses. 40% you spend on doing it, and then 60% is profit given to what you're supposed to do, and you get fired for spending too much money. He did. He did.
Is he foolish or wise? I don't know. It's so confusing. Because I'm thinking that if he
took a little bit of the money that he gave, like let's say he gave that $50,000 and gave it to the poor people and the breast cancer or people that are working and the AIDS people that are suffering, he'd go, here you go, $50,000, yay! There was no overhead, yay! Or if he took that $50,000 and raised it about Bibby Avenue and then gave him $1 million and said, I am so sorry to give you $1 million for this overhead. Oh, that's money getting that money for you. I should have just given you the $50,000 because this is painful. So please don't spend $1 million relieving suffering and pain in the world. Because it's not moral. See, we confuse frugality with morality. We confuse those two and think, oh, we're frugal, we're moral. No. No.
Yeah, the TED Talk is awesome. You can read in the video. One of the things he talks about is that he's a...
Yeah. He's a little biased about his overhead stuff. Yeah, a little bit.
You know, that's how they measure charities, by your overhead. How much do you spend on overhead? And how much do you spend on a certain need? You know, Amazon, everybody heard of Amazon. Anybody heard of Amazon? Who's got a mug? Who's got Amazon mug?
Nobody? The first few years, if you order from Amazon, the end of the year, they sent you a mug. 6 years. They did not get a dime. Investors in Amazon, 6 years, not a dime. Because Amazon pound all that back into scaling up, into being the best, into doing what they do best, into making sure that they could do everything, that they had all the infrastructure there, and the warehousing, and the computers, and the people. They just kept throwing that money back in and throwing that money back in. What charity would be allowed to go for 6 years scaling up to do something? There's that holy stuff. How can we be wise about giving? 2% of GNP goes to charity. Now that 2%, 8% of that goes to institutions, religion, and hospitals, and education. Only 1% of that 2%. Goes to health and human and makes a world better. As Buckminster Fuller would say, making a world that works for everyone. Not just some. The for-profit people get the best people. The for-profit people get the best advertising. They get the only advertising. We're only allowed to get the ones that are donated. No wonder they get 90% of the pie. We can do make things better for the ones that are left behind. No, businesses do a lot of things. They raise up a lot of people, they get jobs, and then but, you know, there's no way to monetize love. Some people need love. Charity, philanthropy, nonprofit organizations, we figured out how to love people.
How can we do that wise? How can we be wise? You know that person without a job and standing in the parking lot with a cardboard sign and a person with may or may not have a transportation problem, I'm not judging, but I'm not so sure, you know. And all those people in homeless shelters and Salvation Army helps out. You know, throw dollars. Is that wise? Because they have low overhead. I mean, cardboard sign, what's that? Overhead. Nothing. I don't make it anything. Is that the best way to raise money for the homeless and solve the problems of unemployment? Colin, he says, when you look at a charity, don't look at them and ask them, what's your overhead? What did you spend making? Because, you know, what if we had a bake sale? Can we have a bake sale? We don't have a bake sale.
Not that.
So what if we had a bake sale and people just
is all the stuff. I mean, they donated the baked goods, you know, they're great and good. And you put up a leaflet in the laundromat, and you told your friends it was in the bulletin, and pretty much the church people sold to other church people, in the bake sale. You had a great year. Let's say you had a super year. You had $700. $700 you made there. No overhead. Yahoo! All right, great. No overhead. Great money, What if you took a dream, and you decided to bottle a salad dressing, and you're going to give all the proceeds to charity, and you're going to make it, and you're going to roll it down the ashes line, and you call it Newman's Own. And you gave millions to charity. Is that wise? Or is that morally inferior to the big sale? What kind of depends if you ask? I bet if you ask the people who got that millions of dollars, if they would rather have $700 of bake sale, pure money, they'd probably say, well, thank you, but I'll go with the salary thing. I like bake sales, but the salary thing gives me more money. Again, we're not sure of the men, we're not sure of the kings, we're not sure if there's three of them, and we're not very little spacey on the wise right now, so sorry, I waited until after Christmas, so I wouldn't spoil it. You're welcome. So, let's go back to those guys and think about those guys. They're given gold and frankincense and myrrh, and we know they were poor. We know if we get out the Holy Family, they were poor people. The manger didn't clue you in. In Luke, we gotta go cheat. Now, don't tell my seminary professors I'm preaching on Matthew whenever Luke, but heck, I've already been to TED Talk. So, we go to Luke, and we look at Luke, and we find out that they have a sliding scale at the temple for offerings for the firstborn. Did you know that? A sliding scale. You're supposed to give a dove and a lamb. That was the rate. But they have a special for the poor people. You can give two doves. You don't have to do the lamb, because if you price lamb like that, die. And then without a blemish, don't even talk to me. So you could have two doves. And that's what the Holy Family gave for Jesus. Doves. They were poor. And what did the kings give them? Well, they don't know, because they don't tell us how much gold, and they don't tell us whether the myrrh and frankincense were the natural resin state or whether it was purely refined. So we don't really know. And then there's a conversion factory, and then the euro comes in somehow. I don't know. But you could probably do it today for $1,000, maybe, because, most of it's the gold price and all that. And they didn't have Bitcoin back then. And so you think about $1,000, but really, if you're talking about a king's ransom, if you're talking about I'm giving a gift to the king, if you're coming in, with a housewarming gift for the king and the new king, you're probably talking about a nice chest of gold. You don't want to bring one or two or an ounce. You bring a nice chest of gold, probably. And you're probably talking about, some refined frankincense and myrrh, the powder. And then, that's some money. And then you think about shipping and handling. Oh, back then, the eBay charges you. Oh, my gosh, try to move all that stuff by Campbell back then. Here's a tip. When they have shipping and handling, I only pay half, because I don't like people touching my stuff. So just ship it, okay? But it could be up to $500,000. $500,000. Boom. Can you imagine coming out of Best Buy? Coming out of Best Buy and giving $500,000 to the people standing there with the cardboard sign? Or dropping $500,000 in the Salvation Army kettle, or $500,000 to the guy who needs some gas. That's right. $500,000 to the guy who comes by the church and looking for some help. Yo! Is that wise? Is that wise, given? And where'd that money go? Annual reports are next week. We're hoping we're having an annual report. Where'd that money go? $500,000. Joseph, come on now.
Should I go to the trust fund for the little boy? I mean, how much did that actually get to Jesus? You know, I don't see any college fund there. Well, most people think that whatever the amount of money it was, it probably was spent bribing and paying and living to get to Egypt to save Christ from the slaughter that was unleashed, strangely enough, by those wise men who opened their big mouth that the King of the Jews was in Bethlehem about 2 years ago. Remember, he said, what time did that star came? And he killed every kid under 2. So the money they gave saved Jesus Christ and the King. Was that a good investment? You know, if the kings instilled the beans, maybe the shepherds, you know, they're big mouths. Well, like even in the Bible, they were shouting. And the angels, they can't keep a secret. They're singing up in the heavens. Someone's going to find out sooner or later. Maybe that was a good investment. All that money, $500,000, salvation of the world. Well, I'm kind of high over it. But great results. I mean, you know, the pampers and the formula and the coffee didn't cost so much, and maybe that'd be more appropriate. Yes, but they wouldn't have gotten to Egypt. They wouldn't have gotten Jesus grown up and saved the world. High overhead, but that's all you look at. But if you look at the value, if you look at what you're trying to do, well, this is much. What if we could cure cancer? Would anyone come back on us and say, your overhead's a little high? 40% for curing cancer? I don't think so. Get back to basics. What if we could reduce poverty from the 21% that's been stuck at for decades? Bring that down to 10. What if we could tell folks no one's homeless in our community? No one's homeless. There's no childless. What if that was our dream? If that was our vision? If that's what we were judging on? In the TED Talk, he says, do not ask what their overhead is. Ask what is their dream. What is their vision? What is their scale? What are their plans? What are the great things that they're going to do? You don't want the cover of your annual report to say, we kept overhead low. You want to say great things that you have done for the community and for the people and for God in the world. And it's not overhead. It's a cost of doing business. You know, Disney can make a movie, lose $20 million, and we say, okay, we still love you. We'll come out the next time you make what you need. You lose $20 million on a project in that private sector, you are dead. You are about to move town, change your name, and never work a nonprofit again, and hope Google don't find you. Hey, let's talk about that overhead, because you know this is supposed to be about the Bible, not about tech. Overhead. Oh yeah, the star. Remember the star? That's overhead. See what I did there? See what I did there? That was great there. Yeah, overhead star. You look up. You don't look what it cost is. You look at where you're going, what your goal is, what God is calling you to, where the glorious things. You say, that's my star. That's where I'm going. That's what I'm up to. You know what? Have you ever heard of how you get a disaster? You may not come here saying, you know what, I hope Christian tells us how to have a disaster. Because I've been waiting for that instruction. But disaster, if you cut it in half, move them apart, and you save the original, a distance actor, distance without.
want disaster in your life, in your church, in your country, in your nonprofit, in your community, without a star,
without overhead, without looking up, you've got disaster. You know, I'm also glad and thankful and praise that God didn't look at the overhead for us. What? My only son? Dead? Killed? Tortured? Rejected? His friends? His disciples? People supposed to follow him? Rejected him? Abandoned him on his night of death? I don't know. It seems pretty high. I was hoping that, you know, maybe they do directly help the poor people. You know, some healings, a couple of miracles, feeding the 5,000, that sort of thing. You know, right to the people without costing too much. You know, maybe some pumice on the eyes to open them up, you know, or some spittle, you know, to heal them, or you know, a banishment of some, you know, that kind of stuff. Everything, 100% overhead. Glad God is in the chair. Glad He loves us. Avoid the disaster. Don't be without a star. Accept overhead as a cost of being great. Love great. Risk. Don't let people say they kept overhead up. Let them say they kept hopes high.